around Kotzebue. It was called Helmets in the Arctic. And at the start of the project, it was observed that the helmet use by ATV and snow machine operators was very low. And the program used a variety of techniques to promote helmet use, which included the media, education, role modeling, helmet discounts, and local option laws. And they found in that area, by the end of the study, that helmet use increased 20% among the youth. And so that a multifaceted approach like this can be very effective. In Alaska, there's about 50 children a year under age 16 that are hospitalized because of an ATV or snow machine crash. The hospital costs range around $9,000 to $10,000 per hospital stay. About one in five are bill their charges to Medicaid or are uninsured. Once again, the same thing I said about head injuries, it's a very costly thing. And because of the speed you're going and the hazards, there's more force on the head. Because of the abundant use of off-road vehicles in the rural areas and in native villages, Alaska Natives are at greater risk than non-natives for this type of injury. In 1991, when I started collecting data for the Trauma Registry, Alaska Native children billed Medicaid less than 10% of the time. Today, they bill almost 40% of the time. This is an indication of the cost shift that's gone on in the last decade from billing from the Indian Health Service over to Medicaid. And I think that, once again, it points out the fact that this is not only just a health issue, but this is a big cost issue for the state.
Martha, hold on just a second. Mr. Knight, could you join us at the table, please, sir? Did you, in your research regarding House Bill 282, did you contact any of the retail sellers of ATVs or off-road snow machines?
I did. I just called around to see what the average cost was for helmets and the average cost was for ATVs and snow machines.
Okay. Did you ask them about their policies regarding the sales and if they do any follow-up or training when they sell an ATV or a snowmobile?
I didn't ask any questions regarding education and or training. I asked if they did sell helmets. They said, well, sometimes they sell helmets, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they suggest they sell that the buyer of a snow machine or an ATV use a helmet, and sometimes they don't. It was kind of up in the air as far as what was proper policy for each retailer.
When we called around, we found one retailer in Anchorage that actually, when you buy an ATV from their store, they don't allow you to leave with it until you watch a training, a safety video. This was just one retailer, so I'm not quite sure about the rest. But I was just wondering if you had come across any ongoing efforts to educate folks. So that was it. Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms.?
Can I make a comment on that?
Absolutely.
Regardless of that particular requirement of the retailer, I know from looking at the injuries in the trauma registry, the children that are injured are 5, 6, 7, 8. So, you know, whatever happens between that, you know, that retailer and by the time the snow machine gets it or the ATV gets into the village and who actually uses it, I think is pretty much two different stories.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Valdez and take testimony from Mr. Dan Coffey.
Yeah, thank you again. I'll keep it brief. Once again, I'm asking that this bill also not be transferred out of committee. And again, I believe that the parents should be controlling the ATVs and four-wheelers that their children are riding. As I said before, I've lived in Bush, Alaska for many years. In fact, they did a study in Kotzebue. Well, I'm a former Kotzebue resident. And I've also traveled and lived in other villages as well. And if you can imagine living in a village with no running water or sewer, and then trying to make your 14-year-old put on a helmet to take a honey bucket to the lagoon, I think you're going to have problems. And if this is a pullover offense, well, I think that we're all in trouble.
Mr. Coffey. Representative Kukesh.
I want to ask Mr. Coffey a question. I really feel this is a different bill than 283, which we just spent some time on, because 283 talked about a bicycle. When we're talking about ATVs and snow machines, we're talking about machines that have engines on them. And when we require motorcycles to be, motorcycle drivers to be licensed, why is that not any different to require, for example, an ATV operator or snow machine person to be held in a different light than that of a bicycle user?
Well, sir, it's my opinion, after traveling through some of these places, that four-wheelers are often a family car, as well as snow machines. Anytime someone goes to the store in the middle of winter, and I'm talking interior, coast, western coast of Alaska, the northern coast of Alaska, where temperatures can get 60 below, I know that my beaver hat is sure a lot warmer than a helmet that was made in Southern California.
I can I follow? Sure.
Absolutely.
I just want to know and have a comment from you on what, why don't you see the bicycle any different than the ATV and snow machine? I mean, I'm trying to figure out why you would be opposed to both when we have two different vehicles here.
And maybe yes, sir, they are two different vehicles, but we're asking for the same route on both of these two different vehicles, which is helmet law passed by the state of Alaska.
Representative Kemplin has a question.
Yeah, Mr. Coffey, are you aware that that Nome, Bethel, and the North Slope Borough have already passed similar ordinances requiring helmet use on these vehicles?
Yes, sir, I am. In fact, Belize also has a mandatory helmet law for anyone with off-road and ATV equipment in the city limits. And once again, as in my first testimony of the 282, you know, if it's a local or an urban issue, then I think it should be treated on that level.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Matsu, Mrs. Elizabeth Ripley.
I believe they dropped off. She had a chance to touch on both bills when she spoke. So.
Got it. Okay. We're going to go to Anchorage, Ms. Ronnie Sullivan.
Ms. Sullivan left. We just have Boyd McPhail left here.
Great. We will take testimony from Mr. McPhail then.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. I'm Boyd McPhail. I'm a legislative affairs rep with the state of Alaska in Anchorage. I would like to expand on some of the helmet issues that haven't been touched on. But I did not see, and I may be wrong, that I did not see a helmet standard laid out in the bill itself. But regardless of that, if we're going to use the DOT standard, it should be known to you that a helmet that is a DOT helmet, this includes what we ride with on our motorcycles, if you drop that helmet from a height of 3 feet, that helmet must be chained. The manufacturer will not guarantee any protection from that helmet at that point in time. So now we're talking about having little kids throwing their helmets around and stuff of that nature. And so they're putting on a piece of gear that's supposed to protect them that now will not protect them. Another fact that you should know about the DOT helmets is that, to the best of my knowledge, it was back in the late 70s that the last DOT-approved helmet was manufactured in the United States. They are now all being manufactured offshore because of liability law. I just can't see how the state can advocate that a helmet will protect you when the manufacturers won't even build them in the United States because of the legalities involved with it. To go on about the protection of a helmet, in the Anchorage area two highly publicized accidents in which actually four people have died. One of the deaths was a man who rode his snow machine along Rockman Road at a high rate of speed and hit a child that was walking down the street. He was wearing his helmet. He died on the scene from massive head injuries. And again, there was another accident down on the Kenai Peninsula where a couple was out riding tandem on their snow machine, both wearing helmets, and they hit a low-hanging branch, and both were killed from head injuries there. So I can't see where the state is insisting that these helmets are the fix-all for this problem. One of the instances, or one of the things that ABATE is trying to do up here in Anchorage, and we're looking at some new programs for rider education, and we have been performing that on an on-road motorcycling program. But we're also now looking at an off-road education curriculum to offer the motorcyclists of the state of Alaska. We believe that education and proper training on the use of the vehicle will eliminate the cause of the accident, thus eliminating the need for this safety gear. I'm not saying that the need of the safety gear is not there, but it's more important to prevent the accident rather than to prevent the injury. We have gone to the extremes in this country where we must prevent the injury, we must prevent the injury. However, it's a lot easier to prevent the injury if you prevent the accident. And the only way to prevent the accident is to educate the person operating either the snow machine, the ATV, the motorcycle, or the automobile, or anything of that nature. I believe with the helmet situation for the DOT with dropping and braking, that it will put an extremely heavy burden on the outlying areas of Alaska, where the ATVs and the snow machines are their primary mode of transportation. I mean, you can't go past any place in any village in the state that doesn't have one or two four-wheelers out in front of the place, in front of the house in the summertime, and then the snow machines in the wintertime. So I believe that we're back at the point on this that we're still usurping the parents' role in the raising of their child. And I think I would like to end my testimony there.
Thank you, Mr. McPhail. Representative Kemplin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McPhail, you know, this piece of legislation, it doesn't mandate that an individual wear a helmet. What it requires is that an off-road vehicle dealer may not sell an off-road vehicle unless the sale includes a helmet. And then it also says that this subsection does not apply to the sale of this off-road vehicle if the individual who's buying it signs a waiver of the purchaser's right to receive a helmet. So it really, there's nothing, you know, completely mandatory about this piece of legislation. It is basically an incentive to increase the level of awareness about the importance of helmet riding by individuals on ATVs and snow machines. Well, on line five, is where the section it says required helmet with retail sale of off-road vehicle.
Line five of
Let me interrupt here, Representative Kemplin. You're working off the CS for House Bill not number 282, not the original. That's okay because it was placed on the table. So
I got him confused then.
Got it, and it's our fault. So Mr. McPhail is working off the original House Bill, and that's the one we're working off.
Right. Sorry, Mr. McPhail. My apologies.
Accepted, and I would like to see the new legislation so I can read that too, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McPhail. The committee has not adopted the CS, and it will be up to the sponsor whether or not we accept the CS. Any other questions for Mr. McPhail? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Our last testifier online is in Kenai, Ms. Jane Fellman.
Jane Feldman has already left Kenai.
She has left the building. Okay. Is there anybody else online that wishes to give testimony on House Bill 282 that I have not called? Anybody at all? Is there anybody in the committee room that wishes to give testimony on HB2?
Can anybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
This is Dr. Russell from the Brain Injury Association of Alaska.
Welcome to the committee. Did you wish to give testimony on HB 282, ma'am?
Yes, under both. They were not able to connect me. I was trying to connect, but for some reason we couldn't talk.
Okay.
You could hear me on this end. I am Dr. Russell, and I run the Brain Injury Association for the entire state of Alaska. And I would like to just talk about brain injuries in general. It doesn't make a difference whether it's moving a vehicle in a snow machine or if they're on a bicycle. The one thing I would like to first to remind people is the reason why we have laws, they're not necessarily for the average person. Most people are responsible when they use bicycles or they drive snow machines. They normally put helmets on and they do things to protect their heads and their families, because if they don't protect their heads, they don't protect their families. Instead, we end up having laws for that 5%, usually 5 to 10%, who make the wrong decisions that we as a state and communities end up having to absorb, and I'm not even looking at the cost of loss to the family, I'm looking at the cost of what the state will end up having to incur. The 5% is the individuals who we end up having to take care of if they don't die in the process of it. Everybody is looking at the statistics that were done by the Alaska Trauma Registry, and I'm sure everybody has gotten that one. But the study that came out from 96 to 98, just death alone, we're looking at almost 2,000 individuals who die from brain injuries. That's phenomenal. And everybody has talked about the rates of 5,000 to 6,000 brain injuries in our state every year. We are the number one state per capita on brain injuries. I just came back last night from a meeting in Washington, D.C. with our senators and everybody else about the trauma, the amount of brain injuries that exist in our state. And putting on helmets just saves a lot of lives and a lot of misery for everybody when they don't put the helmets on. I think most everybody that is aware of us, the Brain Injury Association, we distributed 1,200 multi-sport helmets last year for our state. That's why the need is so great. We did a partnership with the Anchorage Police Departments, with the Alaska Troopers, and the Alaska Native Hospitals, and we were able to distribute out 1,200 helmets. But 1,200 helmets is nothing. I can tell you a story of a young boy who was 14 years old this last summer. We put a helmet on. He was given one of our helmets, one of our free helmets. And he went out bicycling, obviously, and he got hit by a car. And the helmet split in half, and it was a Snell-approved helmet. We all know that we need to be using good helmets, not some of the other helmets that are out there that are not very safe. But they took the young man to the hospital, and he walked away with no brain damage. There are the few people who, no matter what, we know that 12%, no matter how fast or what, no, how strong the helmets are, they're going to die because of the speed or the impact or other things that go with that. But the average person who wears a helmet, whether it's a bicycle or these individuals will have a much better quality of life, and a lot of times they will not have any damage at all, like this young man who walked away. And we have the doctors, and this was in, by the way, in Providence Hospital. I think it was Providence Hospital, but it was here in Anchorage, where the doctor walked away and said that would have been his skull that would have split, because we know it's 185 pounds per square inch on bicycle helmets that protected this young man. So the use of prevention, again, is for the few who do not have either the support they need around them with their families to have helmets. And we as a community, as we as a state, it is our responsibility to do whatever we can to protect our children. I also believe in using helmets, requiring helmets for adults, but number one, let's start protecting our children first, because we have a lifetime of misery for the survivor and their entire family. The average person who has a brain injury, they live a normal life if they survive. Because the average brain injury is mild. It doesn't mean they don't have deficits. It just means that they actually do have deficits. They actually do have trauma, and they do have problems for the rest of their life. Forgive me, I just came in last night. I can't seem to retrieve anything on my own. But the average person has a brain injury. We have 50 to 60 years of taking care of this individual. And since we do not have the quality of rehabilitation here in our state, and we don't have the support systems that should be in place, but they're not, we need to look back at this, at least on a prevention program. And if there's any questions that anybody has, they're welcome to contact us, access our website. We have a pretty extensive website. We also have a rehabilitation program here in the state where we end up working with these individuals who don't have the protections on their head, and we don't have changes that's done in our laws. So contact us, and we are willing to help you with anything when it comes to understanding the importance of protecting brains, protecting our communities, and protecting individuals.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Dr. Russell, let me ask you, I have two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, with all of the statistics and how serious a problem it is with accidents involving bicyclists and not wearing helmets, has there been any research done on those children or even those adults involved in bicycle accidents that weren't wearing a helmet, that owned a helmet but just weren't wearing it at the time? Has there been any research done on that?
I have not seen any of that data. I wish I could tell you that I did see that, but I do see a lot of times I'll see a child put on his helmet, go around the corner and take it off because it's not very cool to put the helmet on. And sometimes that's why it requires a law, because the child will probably follow the law. And so unfortunately we may have to, because children do not make good decisions, otherwise they would be considered illegal and able to make decisions at 12 or 15. And that's why we wait until the ages of 18 to 21 before we can give them the legal rights. So, yes, I don't have that data, but if you would like me to, I will be happy to access that information, which I can get from our national organization.
Sure, I'm just curious because, you know, let us take for instance the exact situation that you just described. My son or daughter, I have a family rule that they have to wear a bike helmet. I see my son put it on in the driveway, he scoots around the corner, takes it off, goes two blocks and has an accident. Now that in fact could be happening, is that not true?
It can, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Although I do see the majority of the kids that have helmets, I usually see them on their heads.
Certainly. And just a comment, because, you know, we had Sharon Lobaugh was testifying earlier, and she talked about how the landscape in public health has changed the last 20 years. We've gone from fighting infections to fighting injuries.
That's right.
You know, 20 years ago, I was 15 and I had a bike. I didn't even know bike helmets existed.
Right.
and I didn't know too many of my friends that had bike helmets. And it seems to me today, I know I make my daughter wear one every time. And I see a lot of kids in my neighborhoods. I mean, I see more kids today than ever wearing bike helmets. So I think obviously the education, or at least the idea that you need to be wearing a bike helmet, has certainly, I would say even radically, the awareness level has increased since I was a teenager.
Right.
Yeah. Any other questions for Dr. Russell?
But do you remember what I just said a little while ago? The average person and responsible parents, a lot of times we do have helmets. We automatically get them for our children. But I have had many, many individuals who came to our lifetime helmet program, where we actually distributed helmets, that came to us. That one woman, she had 6 children, and I forget, it was a small town or a small village. She came to us, and we got the helmets to them. And the way we had it, when somebody was talking about, well, the helmets don't fit and things like this, and it doesn't protect them, our program is they get the helmets from us based on their size. We give them a way to measure it. They get the helmets. They distribute, they bring that helmet back to us. We exchange it for free for one that does fit as the child grows. So that comment that was made about that doesn't exist, because we do have helmet programs where people can exchange these helmets as the child grows. Does that make sense to what I'm saying? Is that it doesn't? There is programs here, but unfortunately there are still hundreds of children. When we look at the statistics that were done by the trauma registry, those are children who were hospitalized. 2,000. Or two, and that isn't necessarily children, it was adults as well, but 2,000, almost 2,000 individuals who died from this, from brain injuries. And when we're looking at there are hundreds and hundreds of children who I deal with and work with after the fact, where they're having problems, which someone did mention, problems in school, problems with behaviors, problems with learning, that may not show from 3 to 6 months after they've had the brain injuries. And brain injuries are cumulative. So if they take a blow when they're 2 or 3, and they take another one when they're 4, we do have a high rate of individuals who are in the criminal system afterwards because of it. And their brain is because of the brain injuries, because things are not connecting in the brain. So we are looking at a long-term problem that exists even economically, when all we have to do is put on a helmet. And there are lots of programs to provide those helmets. So let's look for the few. If we save one child, can you put a price on that? We can't.
I would agree. Any other questions for Dr. Russell? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, Dr. Russell.
You're welcome.
Next, we're going to invite Sharon Lobaum back to the table.
Thank you very much for staying. I really appreciate all the listening you've done. It's really, I know, a long and a complicated issue. But the issue of bikes is just quite a bit different from ATV and snow machine based on the impact itself. You know, you're talking 20 miles, 30 miles, 50 miles an hour. So you've got a speed, which is a greater variable and a much higher risk. So, you know, they're different vehicles and different bells for that reason. I have a few facts that might help you. One is there's a fatal accident reporting system, which is put out by the Department of Transportation. It's a little different from the trauma registry. And in the 1998 data for people who were injured or killed with incidents with ATVs and snow machines, they have recorded those that were wearing helmets and those that were not in this year. And out of the 77, 60 who were injured were not wearing helmets. 9 were wearing helmets. So it's quite a dramatic difference. And 8 of them were unknown. So that's, yes.
Are these here in Alaska?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's just 1 year. So it's looking at, sometimes you can't find that, like you don't hear in the newspaper whether they're wearing a seatbelt or not, you know, so it's sometimes the data's not available. But we do know this much about the 77 incidents, 60 were not wearing helmets, 9 were, and 8 are unknown. I would like to encourage you to consider Judy's comments about adding education somehow into this bill, improving the bill in that way. I don't know if you might consider that. Also wanted to point out that one of the things I'm adding to your issue of cost, and the trauma registry speaks only to the cost of the incident, the one-time cost. But what Dr. Russell is mentioning is that 50 and 60 years of recovery can cost Medicaid money of $100,000 to $200,000 a year. See, that's how, I mean, I think that's the real impact, is that these don't just cure like a broken bone, and it's really often they really don't, the serious ones. And then even the non-so serious, we pay a public cost by some of the hidden injuries. And I also wanted to mention the study that we were talking about here in Kotzebue about increasing the use of helmets for ATV and snow machine riders. I was involved in that study as well, and there are a couple of things that I think are very significant about that, and that is after they did several different ways, like they tried education, see how that worked, they tried health at health fairs and promotions, and they put posters in schools that see if that increased, and in another village they added role models, they put them on public safety officers. In fact, they even made them fur-lined, they have beaver helmets, so that, you know, it's warm, you know, because that was a problem. So they did all different kinds of ways to see what really worked. And the most effective way of encouraging increasing the use was cheaper cost, so they sold them at cost. So they dropped the helmet cost from $80 down to $50, and more people would buy them. And they noticed after the study, I think it actually ran 3 years, and they tried different ways to see which worked most effectively. So when they added all these things together, they found that the cheaper cost was the best incentive for wearing it. However, that was, and they increased the percentage of youth riding by 50% more riding. So it was really significant. However, that was only among snow machine riders. There was no impact on increasing ATV riders. So this study came up with sort of a serious unknown. What are we going to do to increase the use of helmets for ATV riders? And I think, you know, one big step would be making it mandatory. And that, and I think, is really important and significant for you to note that that is a policy and ordinance in Nome, Bethel, North Slope, and Valdez, and places like that. They recognize this is a problem. And absent of state law, they're really taking some steps. So I hope that helps a little bit.
I'm going to I'm going to ask committee aide Kevin Hand to come to the table, because I'd like Kevin to give us some testimony on a discussion he had today with a gentleman who owns the Honda of Anchorage store. Kevin, could you join us at the table, please? Because Sharon, go ahead and you can just go ahead and stay right there.
I'd like to comment on to Honda dealership. I know a little bit about this.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Kevin. For the record, my name is Kevin Hannon, House Transportation Committee staff. Just in discussions with some dealers who sell snowmobiles, ATVs, and the such here today. They had a few concerns discussed with them: helmet law, mandatory helmet law, and also the possibility of making it mandatory that they sell a helmet with a new sale of a ATV, or at least have a waiver. Generally, it was widely supported for many reasons. The ones they gave most often were that with the technological advancement of these machines, and how way back in the day the Honda Big Red 250, I don't know if he worked in fish sites or something like that, but the Big Red was the first big three-wheeler that came out. Now we're talking, snowmobiles have 700, 800, 900 cc's is common day, and of course we have that problem with avalanches and the Highmark, and just the machines have advanced so much. And one of the problems he brought up is that young people do not have the body mass to safely operate these vehicles. And I'm sure if anyone has ridden a snowmobile, especially a larger one, and gone at a pretty good clip and tried to turn very sharply, if your weight isn't shifted, that thing is going to roll on you, no question about it. And their concern was that, in fact, that young people do not have the body mass readily available to safely operate these machines, except for the 90 cc's, the 110 CCs, the smaller versions of the three-wheelers and the such. And he generally, one thing was pointed out by an owner of a Honda of Anchorage today when I was discussing with him, is that, pardon me, is that there are a few things that he pointed out, and let me try to remember exactly what he said, is that one more often he says he has a lot of people who walk in, a lot of parents who walk in with a 9-year-old son, and they want to buy a big 300cc three-wheeler, and he often points out and saying, now, say as far as safety as operation is concerned, would you let your 9-year-old operate your car? Would you let him drive your car down the road? And every parent says, are you kidding me? You're out of your mind. And he says, honestly, no question that a 9-year-old is safer operating your car with safety belts and airbags and all the things we have today than driving a very powerful snowmobile or three-wheeler down a trail. It is, in fact, much safer, although the idea is sometimes a little absurd to parents, but it's, in fact, a truth. And so he spoke about a lot of things, and, of course, we discussed the statistics about the amount of deaths that happen on ATVs and such this year. And one of the things he did point out is plenty of people die on ATVs. A lot of those, in fact, weren't operations. A Winsor story, he said, is two of the 97% of deaths that happened in the last year on off-road vehicles, 97% were alcohol-related, of the problems that were involved. And in fact, two of those involved people on ATVs, three-wheelers, who were sitting in rivers in some sort of waterway with the engines not running, who actually fell off and drowned in shallow water. And so it's just not necessarily sort of a turn on the statistical evidence of it. But one thing that was pointed out by an owner of these dealerships today is that he, in fact, supports the idea of a helmet with everyone, and he, in fact, was at one time supportive of giving away a helmet with the purchase of a new vehicle. Obviously, things are spendy. But he found it to be economically unfeasible. And so, although it, in fact, is a very good idea, and he'd like to support it that way, the economics of it just wouldn't make it. But everyone I spoke to today was, in fact, supportive of a helmet law for younger riders, mainly because that, in fact, is where most young riders, the ones that, whether it be recklessness or inability to control them or inexperience, do, in fact, have many, many problems on these ATVs. And generally, helmets go a long, long way into promoting safety among those. And most of them, in fact, supported either mostly from a liability standpoint. As a secondary note, Polaris Industries, the manufacturer, Polaris four-wheelers and the such, mandates that before you can walk off the lot with a brand new four-wheeler, that you must watch a safety video. In fact, you cannot walk away with it until you have actually watched a safety video and the such. North American Honda, in fact, will send one. As soon as it is sold, they send one to the address of record. They're not quite so stringent, but purely because of a liability standpoint. And so these dealers, as far as requiring a helmet purchase or a signature of a waiver saying that they understand the risks without dealing with helmets, were totally in support of it, and mainly because of a liability standpoint from the manufacturers and for the sellers.
Thank you. Any questions for Kevin?
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you very much. As always, stellar work.
To the chair, sure. Just a little bit of comment on this. It's very interesting. One of the things that happened in Alaska, I'm trying to think of the date, and somebody might know. There was the Consumer Product Safety Commission banned the sale of three-wheelers about 10 years ago. I can't recall. Do you remember, Mary? Or? No, more than that, I think. Yeah, more than that. Primarily because Alaska led the fight against three-wheelers because they were so unstable. They're just like riding a big bike, motorized tricycle, you know, and they're just in the mud and they're all over the place. So in that ruling, the Consumer Product Safety Commission required that dealers sell their products with safety information. So I think this is kind of what you're talking about. And the best trained people in snow machine and ATV safety are trained through dealers. You know, and that's basically, when I last year was trying to find someone to do training, I was trying to get something for kids to train them. And we found out that one of the requirements is that they cannot sell to under 16. That's consumer product regulations is they cannot sell to under 16. And they have checked Alaska on spot checks. CPSC comes and checks the dealer and say, I got my kid here, I want to buy an ATV. just to test out whether the dealers are actually upholding that rule. Now, last year, there was a recall of that rule. And I think it kind of passed over a lot of Alaskans without being aware of it. And so what this means is that in the near future, I believe, you can begin to see three-wheelers being sold in Alaska again. That's a high probability because they are very popular. And they were never taken away from the owners here. They're still being recycled. You still see them in operation. And they're still causing injuries as well. But I guess my point being that that by having educated the dealers, I think they are educating them in a good way, that they are knowledgeable enough to know, you know, what the hazards are and how they should be operated, and they are also encouraging children not to use it. But that doesn't mean that they aren't using them. They're very, very much users, and so we have a dilemma in injury prevention. We want to see them ride safely, but at the same time, they're not supposed to be handling those machines because they're really pretty powerful.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Sharon? Seeing none, thank you very much. At this point in time, similar to HB 283, we are going to put this on the table and allow the bill sponsor to possibly entertain some suggestions. I would encourage some discussions with if the dealers, you know, they have a dealer association, because as Kevin found out today, they were surprisingly very supportive of this simply to cover their own liability. So we had a CS drafted that we faxed around, and they seem pretty supportive of that, but I'm going to leave that in your hands, Representative Kemplin. If you wish to adopt that, you can do that, or make any changes that you see fit. But with that, I'm going to close public testimony for today. I will leave open public testimony on both these bills, because if they come back with changes, we'll obviously want to go back and take additional testimony on the amendments.
Yeah. Okay? Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me time to present these two pieces of legislation before the committee, and I'll be working on developing some solutions to the issues that were raised today. Thank you very much.
We'll look forward to hearing these in the future. So with that, we do not have a meeting on Tuesday. Next Thursday, we'll be in the resources room, 124. We'll have two bills, the renaming of a bridge, which is a Senate bill, and then we're going to turn the gavel over to Representative Hudson. He's going to chair the Southeast Transportation Plan Oversight. So with that, the Transportation Committee is adjourned at 324.